light the beam, because it's time for Nerdy for 30, the podcast where we talk about nerdy-ish movies for 30-ish minutes. My name is Kevin Bauer, a.k.a. The Critic's Choice. With me, as always, is the People's Champ, Tim Kak. And today, we have heard your hopes. We have heard your tweets. You've been hashtagging, hashtag dating back for Dune since 2022. We're making it happen now. Danielle King is back in the studio. We're talking Dune 2022 tonight. Tim, you want to give us a little bit of preamble on Dune?
On a preamble on Dune? Okay. So there's it's like a space opera. It's like Star Wars kind of ish. They're in space. There's this family called House Atreides, and the Emperor sends them to a planet that they pretty much know they're going to die on, because the people that they kicked off that planet are pretty angry. And I guess the Emperor hates House Atreides. So then they attack the planet, kill everyone in House Atreides pretty much, except for this kid and his mom, who escaped to the desert and are welcomed by the aptly named Free Men who live in the desert. So it's thrilling in a slow crawl of a way. And somehow it strikes a perfect balance between it feels like rushing to get a lot of information in, but also like nothing's happening. So I don't know. I like this way more on the rewatch than I did the first time I saw it. It is very cool. There's a lot of cool stuff on it. Visually, it's amazing. But, you know, I can be proven wrong with this. I don't know if I've fully bought into the Dune lore. So, Danny, I'm hoping you can enlighten us a little bit with Dune. What's going on? Does this fit your standards? You're a Dune head, right? A self-proclaimed Dune head?
I think I was the only one that was tweeting Danny back for Dune. because I just like to hear myself talk. No, I wouldn't call myself a Dune head. I did. I like classic literature. So I've been reading a lot of classic literature, and on almost every like you must read before you die list, like Dune is up there, and it's also up there in all the sci-fi books. And I am a huge sci-fi nerd. I love sci-fi over fantasy. Sci-fi is always my go-to. So Dune, I know, is just like a seminal work in sci-fi. So I read the whole book, at least the first book, because there's a series, as I come to find out, prior to this podcast, prior to watching the movie 2 years ago, or whenever the movie came out. Did it come out in 2020? Is that what you said, Kevin?
I think 2022. It was 21. Okay.
Yeah, oh, wow. 2021.
Good God. Okay,
so 3 years ago, I watched this movie. And I mean, okay, so I read the book first, and I was not super impressed. I thought it was fine, but it didn't like blow me away by any stretch of the matter. And then I watched the movie and I felt very similarly. I think I have a lot of feelings and opinions on this. So I don't know. I can like go give my overarching view, or I don't know if you guys want to break it down scene by scene. To be quite honest, I haven't seen the movie in 3 years. I watched it once and I got my fill. If you want to hear my more detailed, in-depth view, you should listen to the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special episode that Tim and I recorded, which kind of veered off for most of it. I think we talked about Dune for a good chunk of that podcast.
We did.
So I can give you like my overall thoughts, which is like my ultimate sentiment on Dune is that I think it's kind of just like sci-fi for dads. That's how I've been categorizing it, is that yeah. It's just like, dads will love this. Dads will love this movie. I know everybody that has read Dune that has recommended it to me, like very emphatically, has been like a dad. Like it is sci-fi for dads, in my opinion. I do know a little bit more of the history, but I don't want to get like too deep into speaking, you know, hearing myself speak before Kevin gets a chance to.
Yeah, oh Kevin, get in there. What's your overall Dune take?
I just want to say, as a general rule for this podcast, Danny, you are not going to scare us off with deep Dune lore. Feel free to dig into those sieges and get to the tens of thousands of fremens of knowledge that you have when, you know, most people were probably estimated to be a maximum of 50,000 fremens of Dune knowledge in the entire brain. I thought this was kind of surprisingly cool. I did not see this when it came out. I just watched this a couple days ago just to prepare for this pod. And I'm right there with you, Tim. It feels like a lot of build up to something. Like they're clearly rushing to give us a lot of information. This whole movie, it's 2.5 hours long. Very little actually happens in this movie, but what does happen is like pretty cool. And it struck me as the rare case of a movie that is kind of like bad because it's not long enough. I kept thinking if this was a 6-episode HBO miniseries, it would be rad. It would be so cool because there's all these little details that they just like throw in our faces. Like the woman is suiting them up with the still suits and she's like, yep, I'm the foremost expert on still suits. Go ahead, pull that strap right there. Still suits, as you know, take the water from your body and recycle it. And you're like, this is not, people don't explain how parachutes work when you're going skydiving.
They're explaining things the whole time.
They really are.
Constantly. I was like, even after they're attacked, they're in the desert, they use a tent, and he has to be like, look, this is the water that the tent creates from our sweat and moisture.
Sweat and
mom,
tears.
I can't wait to drink your fluids, mom, in the desert. And they also have this awkward, like, undressing scene with each other. I don't know what they're trying to show with him and his mom. It's a weird vibe there.
I can say the book as well is very it's dry. It's a dry, it's a lot of explaining. And so what I've heard is, well, so I read the book. The book is just three parts, and this movie is just part one. And it's a very dense part one. And like the book covers a lot. Because as I was reading the book, I was like, okay, this has to be the climax and it's going to wrap up soon. And it just like keeps going. So there's lots more in store. And what I've heard is that the rest of the series, like this is just the intro. So this is just the setup for what the whole arc is like, much more intense. And there's like so much more to dig into. So I think I agree with your take, Kevin, that it could probably be better suited as a mini series of some sort, because I don't know what they're going to do after they're done with book one, if they're going to keep making these movies, but like, there's, I think, like 8 of these books in the series. I don't fully remember the book as well being quite as explicit with its like descriptions of things, which actually is kind of nice because in the book you're reading it, it's like all this stuff is thrown at you and none of it's explained. So it's just like all of these things are happening and it's like you're trying to keep up. And like that's how some sci-fi books are. And like I'm cool with that. It's like kind of just like go along for the ride. And as you know, as things develop, you then learn how they work. I can't speak to his relationship with his mom, though. I don't.
It was very uncomfortable. I picked up on that one, too. It's like there are moments in this movie. I don't know what they were going for, but what they got accidentally was a will they, won't they between mom and his mom.
The tension is palpable. I don't get it.
It's very Oedipal. It's really strange.
Yeah, it's there's weird tension with the whole voice thing, which has to pay off somehow, because it kind of paid off now. And I don't know, the voice seems like if this wasn't based on a book, I'd be like, we could just cut this part, you know. Like
it's what I don't like about two things, I guess, about like doing that rubs me the wrong way is that, like I said, I like sci-fi over fantasy. And Dune has this weird, like, it's this weird kind of almost middle ground where, like, there's a lot of sci-fi stuff. There's also weirdly a lot of, like, fantasy stuff. Whereas in sci-fi, I think the main thing that I like, or just, like, is my general take on sci-fi, is that there's going to be magical elements. But those magical elements are not actually magic. They're technology. And, like, the technology is what makes it seem magical. But in fantasy, there really is magic. And so in sci-fi, you have robots and you have all these different races from all these different planets. And there's a scientific explanation if you really dig into each and every individual aspect of why these people are this way, or why this technology works this way or that way, or why, you know, this species does this thing that way or whatever. And in fantasy, it's a lot of like magic. It's like, yeah, the elves are magical beings, so they have magical whatever, you know, metal is enchanted. It's not just like a laser. And that's what I don't like about Dune, is that it seems to really like lean on fantasy elements a lot in a weird way that just always rubbed me the wrong way. And that never really I got over, because there is like so much of that. Like there's like the people who are just like psychic. And as much as there is some of that in some sci-fi stuff, I just feel like it leans into that so hard. Like when I see sci-fi, I want to see lasers. And like up top at the very beginning of Dune, they're like, yeah, there's no lasers here. Like we got rid of that technology. Now we're back to swords, which I'm sure is some sort of metaphor, but it's like, that's not what I want in sci-fi. I want to see laser guns. I want to see laser swords. I want to see like something, you know, science fiction-y. I want to see some science with my fiction. I don't want to just see, I mean, sword fights.
Yeah, I feel that. Tim and I were just texting last week. I'm also not a fantasy person. I have a hard preference for sci-fi. It's interesting to kind of see those elements here, because I know Frank Herbert, the author of the Dune novels, feels like George Lucas ripped him off. And in watching this and never having read the Dune novels, George Lucas definitely ripped him off. There is much Star Wars that is directly Dune, and the voice and the force and all the stuff that the beignets,
a New Orleans beignets, treat,
like, Nolan's beignets, yeah,
powdered sugar, Nolan's beignets.
that's the secret of the voices. Spice is just powdered sugar. It's so clear that they're Jedi, and it's just like a more witchy take on Jedi, or like a more monk-like and less witchy take there. It's for some reason it worked for me here, though. It clicked in when I realized that they were going with the angle of Paul Atreides is the heir to two thrones. Like, that's suddenly when it was like, oh, okay, I kind of dig that. And the fact that he and Oscar Isaac are both pissed about the fact that he, unbeknownst to them, is kind of like bred to be this like witch king, and he didn't know about it, is pretty fun. I think the fact that he's kind of like a reluctant witch king at first, and also kind of a reluctant non-witch king, it's like a double fuck.
He is torn between two worlds, but he is also, to use a much maligned term, a bit of a Mary Sue, where he's just good at everything. Everybody loves him. And his name's Paul, which is also like crazy. no one has a savior named Paul. You know, I think it just dates the book a little bit. And Frank, what's his face, is writing a lot of strong Christian names in this book, except for
Duncan Idaho,
which is insane. That was insane. They said his name and I laughed. Oh, I lost my mind with Duncan Idaho. Crazy.
Every time. Dude, you know what Lauren said is this is just Jackie Daytona. It's just,
yeah, have
you watched What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes.
Oh, Jesus. It's just
Daytona.
I don't know who Jason Momoa used to be in this universe, but he left that life behind and he's Duncan Idaho, a spider pilot now.
I like to think when he shaves his beard, he becomes Duncan Idaho. But he's torn, but I just find it a little lame. It seems like he's good at everything, like right away. And everybody likes him and everything. He's just destined to be, but it feels like he's kind of carried on like what are those things that they carry like kings and queens on, I don't know. It's not too important for this metaphor. He is carried on looked up to by everybody constantly in this. They're like, wow, he even knows how to put on this like sweatsuit. The real way, you know, like everyone's seeing him and then quoting scripture. And it feels like everything's being handed to him in a way that I don't appreciate, you know, like Star Wars, you know, ripping this off or whatever. Like Luke sucks at the Force. A New Hope, he's bad. Mm-hmm. He doesn't get good at it until Return of the Jedi, pretty much. And he's struggling the whole time. And it seems like this guy is getting it done. Regardless, like it seems like everything just works out for him in a very weird way. He can't really do the voice, but he can also do the voice. I don't know. Am I crazy here? I guess, does he have any real struggles to overcome in this movie?
Yeah, that's why I also found it off-putting, is because there's like this, the movie in general is, I think, and the book in general is severely lacking any sort of humor and any sort of like, and I guess so this is what I've heard as well, that like the other books get into it more. And this is like, again, just a setup. And if you're off put by the first book, don't let it stop you. You should keep reading because it gets even crazier. And no spoilers, because I do know a little bit about what happens, but his flaws and stuff do come out, I guess, later on. But it's kind of, it does feel very like white savory, like perfect all-star American boy. And that's why I say it's like sci-fi for dads, because I feel like this is, he's the son all dads want, where he's like, he's the quarterback. He's the MVP. He's like Harry Potter with no scar. He's like perfection.
Harry Potter with no scar is great.
That's what he is. He's flawless.
He doesn't even have a scar.
Yeah. So like, that's why I have a hard time connecting, I think, with this movie and with Paul and with some of the other elements. But I do think, Kevin, your point, like George Lucas absolutely ripped off Dune. But the thing is that I think he ripped it off and I think he did it better. So I'm not so mad at him, because I think it's a very similar story, lots of very similar elements. But instead of saying like, oh, they have regular swords, it's like, let's make it laser swords. And so maybe I'm too hung up on the laser thing, but I just think that that makes it better. And I just think that, like, the one thing that I'll say about Dune, and this is like a little bit of like my reading and my history and understanding of Dune, because I think with classic literature or some of this older stuff, it's important to understand the context of like when and how it came out. And I don't remember the exact date, because I did have extensive notes that I lost in the preceding 3 years. But like it came out before Star Trek. It came out before Star Wars. Like it came out, like the book was written, I mean, after 1984, obviously, but it was like when you read this, probably, I think it came out like 1960, like the early 60s. Like if you were to read this in the early 60s, it would be probably fucking mind blowing, because you'd be like, wow, if you've never seen Star Wars, if Star Trek had never existed, if you've never seen any of this stuff and you're reading a book for the first time about a little, like, you know, whatever kid who goes to a special planet with all these crazy, like at the time it was mind blowing. I think now part of the charm is lost, because we do have so many other like science fiction works that have come out since that do similar but better. So that does kind of, I do want to give Dune that amount of credit, though that I don't necessarily love it. And I think it is more for, there's a demographic that I think would love this, again, it's like kind of middle-aged men, which I am not in that demographic, but I can appreciate it for what it did, and that it did give us, I think, Star Wars. Like, I don't think Star Wars would exist in its state if it wasn't for Dune.
Yeah. That's cool. The book came out in 1965. So they like just got electricity. They're blown away by all of this. You know, the wheel was just invented. Wow. Like these are folks.
I mean, that's 4 years before man landed on the moon. So like, you know, they're like, I mean, it's crazy. Like, wow, spaceships were a thing. Like that's a mind blowing concept in 1965.
Can you imagine you have only read like period pieces in Victorian England, and then you read Dune and it's like the ship lifts off and they're like, the ship does what? It lifts off. And it's like, I'm not following.
It flies. Well, that's what the other thing that really, because I think just knowing how like helicopters work or whatever, like I just wanted to know what your guys' takes were on the like the dragonfly helicopters. Yeah. I can't remember what the name of those are. Those are a thing. I think they're so dumb, but I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts.
They're so dumb, but you're right. In the 1965 context, how do you explain the movement of a spaceship to people? Though this could be their first like exposure to it in a lot of ways. You look at a dragonfly, what does it do? It moves in like whatever four dimensions, you know, it goes up, down, side to side, front, back, you know, an airplane just goes forward. So like they've got to differentiate somehow. I can see how, especially in a book, this is like a very useful description and illustration. For us now, it's very old fashioned looking. It's very corny, I think. And there's like, why do we have wings? Why are there wings? You have all these other ships without wings. And why does this need wings? Just make a hover thing. The technology in this is strange. I agree. I like the sword fighting. I do like fantasy elements of stuff. I love hand-to-hand combat, but they have a shields, but then the shields don't work, but they kind of work, but you can like kind of pierce through them. There's no lasers for some reason. But there are bombs that they just drop on everybody and they shoot missiles, no lasers. It's just a weird combination of stuff. And they also have the merging of like human elements is crazy. We have a bullfighting family that plays the bagpipes and speaks Mandarin. Like, what are we trying to portray here? when they're walking off this ship with swords and no lasers, it's just and dragonfly ships. It's very confusing. It's a hodgepodge of stuff.
This is what endures. This is set in the far future. That is what is left of humanity. Bullfighting, bagpipes, Mandarin language. I want to take umbrage with the fact that both of you keep saying there's no lasers in this movie. There is one laser in this movie, and it's pretty sick. It is in the scene where they're trying to cut through the door to get to Paul Atreides after Duncan Idaho goes. The thing that I like about it is it's a realistic depiction of a laser where it carries the same force for the entire intensity of the beam that's visible. And I feel like that right there highlights why they would have had to stop it on the battlefields, because it's just like, oh, this sucks. It would be like dragging one long blade across the entire battlefield. Like, if you just move that across the battlefield, everybody's dead. Cruel and unusual. How good would that be? You prove nothing.
How good would that be, cutting through people? I mean, these guys are also being ambushed, right? These guys are being attacked like deep down and dirty by their enemies and unprovoked. And why not use a cool laser? That would be neat. I got excited about the laser scene because I thought this was shot so stupid. Like, they're in this room and they're trying, and the bad guys are coming. So Duncan's like, okay, I'm going to go out there and fight them. And my first thought was, you don't need to do that, Duncan. just close the door. Then he goes outside and they're like, he locked the door. Oh my gosh. Then he fights and dies in this hallway. And they're like, okay, now what do we do? And then the person guiding them through this place opens a secret passage, which, like, where was this when Duncan was walking out? Why couldn't you just be like, yo, secret passage, we don't have to do this. And then she opens a secret passage on one side of the room, and then the laser cuts through the door. And for some reason, the three of them are now on the opposite side of the room from the secret passage. So they have to dodge the laser. Like, Duncan has to cut off the laser so they can get across the room to the secret passage that this woman already opened and should be standing next to. There's just so much stupidity in that scene that I just like, I just can't wrap. What is this? I don't know. And it's cool. It's a cool scene, but also so stupid. Tune's weird, guys. I don't know.
It's weird because there's also like I can't remember, and I'm confusing, I think, the book maybe with the movie, but isn't there like a scene where he like fights another guy to win Zendaya's hand in marriage or something? Is that for fans?
Maybe that's in another book. He fights a guy.
A guy, and that's Zendaya cool. Came in like at the end of this movie, right? Mm-hmm. At the very end.
Yeah.
And a guy challenges him. That was going to be one of my beefs for the movie, is because they are, Paul and his mom make it, they escape from the sandworm and they make it to like a little rock outcropping, and they get ambushed by the Fremen that what's his name from No Country for Old Men is there.
Oh, Javier Bardem.
Yeah, Javier Bardem. And Javier Bardem's like, so I remember you and we're cool, so come along. And then this one random person that Paul had a vision about, in the vision, the guy's like, I got a lot to teach you, Paul. You and me stick together. And then suddenly this guy's like, you were bested by Paul Atreides in battle, so I'm going to challenge his mom. Who's going to fight for his mom? Because apparently she can't fight for herself. Paul volunteers and Paul kills him.
Yeah.
Yes. What the fuck? There's a lot I do. Okay, some of this is coming back to me now. Again, if you want my detailed takes on Dune, the first movie, listen to the Christmas holiday episode. A little confusing here. But there's a lot that the movie left out of like little tiny details that the book did include, of like people's motivations, you know, some of those like background things that always get cut out of books, or like inner monologues or thoughts. And yeah, there was something to do with like, that's how Zendaya comes into this. And it'll probably be in the start of the next one, is that like Zendaya, I think, is like married to that guy or whatever, or like whatever the Fremen term is for marrying, and Paul kills him. And then now it's like Zendaya's like his wife. Like, that's how it works. Apparently, if you kill some woman's husband, then you get her as well or something.
Cool. Dating in the future, I guess. 1965. The new app is picking up your gun and walking over to the neighbor's house. terrifying. That I like that. I like that scene because it feels like in a lot of ways the story is on rails just because he's the hero. He's fated to be the hero. I feel like there's very little tension. Like he's gonna accomplish whatever he sets out to accomplish. I feel like we're not gonna get any curves in this entire thing. So It is neat that now that he's showing these visions and you think, oh, these are what's all going to come true, but they've immediately shown examples of how the visions aren't true or they're possible futures, and he's able to undercut them very Madam Web style. He is just seeing glimpses of what could be and, you know, maybe altering it to like adjust things. So the idea that this guy could have been an incredible mentor to him and instead he's a foe that he has to kill is interesting. That's interesting conflict. I don't know why he lost his shit and wanted to attack Paul. That seems a little crazy.
Yeah, there's parts, like I said, there's parts cut out from the book. I think this, to the film's credit, though, as well, it does follow the plot of the book, I think, pretty closely. There's a lot of, if I remember correctly, dialogue, like, lifted directly. The plot is pretty much the same. They don't cut too much out because they did, I mean, it's a long movie. But they just cut out some of those little details that explain, like, some character development and stuff. So if you are curious, I mean, if you like this, I would recommend the book. I think it's very much, like I said, what's not engaging for me is, I think, what is more engaging for Tim is that like you're not going to get a lot of curveballs. And that's like what I've heard again is like the rest of the series kind of digs in more to that and like his flaws and things. But this is very much a straightforward, like it's hard to even say it's a hero's journey because I don't think he changes all that much. He's just good at everything all the time.
Yeah. What do you guys think of the, what do y'all think of the actors in this? Because the cast is stacked. I think this cast is crazy. I don't know what these characters are supposed to be like, but it seems like they're crushing it. I don't know. Javier Bardem, Josh Brolin, love it. Timothée Chalamet is the only one where I'm like, he's giving me Joffrey vibes. Is that crazy? Mm-hmm. He just seems like he just seems like a spoiled brat in this. Or is that like kind of what the character is? Or I don't know. I mean, he is like a pampered kid.
Yeah.
It feels like it could be character.
It's, I think partially it's like, yeah, because I think the arc for him is a little bit that like he comes from a very pampered, you know, he is the rich prince who then has to go and live with like the people, you know, the lower class or whatever. And that's his big learning arc or whatever is that like he had to go be poor for a little while.
Okay, then Timothée Chalamet probably fits that vibe. He does feel like somebody who is like schlumming it with the rest of us. Any other thoughts on Dune? Where are we at? Are we excited for Dune 2? Is this is it going to start trending upwards? I mean, because I was looking at the books on Goodreads, and this is one of the rare series where it only drops on Goodreads. I feel like
really
it's like Dune is really highly rated, but then each like book after that. And then I guess the author died and his son wrote the last two.
Yeah.
Two or three, I guess he half finished the sixth one. But, you know, I feel like on Goodreads, the trend is like the first one does well. Second one, maybe a dip. And then the other ones like pick up because the people that are reading the third book are fans, so they're rating it more favorably. And the fact that it never gets back up to a four, I find a little concerning. That we're getting all the way to Dune 6 and the people, the diehards who read all the way to Dune 6 are still like, it's a three for me.
I think it's people like me, because anybody that I talked to that I was like, I read Dune, I didn't love it, they're like, oh, that's fine. You're not going to love the first one. You got to read the next five. That's what I keep hearing from people. Is that like, if you didn't like the first one, that's understandable. The first one's just okay, but keep reading. You're going to hate it, but it's going to get really good at some point. And I don't think it ever does. I think it's a racket of some kind, or it's just, I think, like I said, I think there's a demographic that it really fits, and I'm not in that demographic.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Fernberg read through all of them, and his take after reading up to like Dune 8 or whatever it was. Yeah, it's just more Dune. Like after you read the first Dune, you pretty much get it. And then it's just seven books and more Dune. Like nothing new really happens.
Which, yeah, if you love Dune, it's more Dune. But I am more excited for the second movie just because, like, I feel like there was a bait and switch with they always do with marketing, which is like, oh, there's going to be a Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya film. And it was like, she was not in it at all. So I am interested because I do love Zendaya to see, like, the next movie, how she works in. But I can't say that I'm dying to see it.
Yeah, for someone who was just working every red carpet and every interview possible to promote this first movie, she is barely in this thing. And it's a bummer. I feel like she would have. She's great. I love Zendaya. Zendaya. She's amazing. Would love more of her.
Kind of shocking. I'm stoked for the second movie. We bought our tickets as soon as the first one was over. And we were like, oh, we got to see the second one in IMAX because we didn't see the first one in theaters at all. So we looked around at the showtimes that are available. We checked every single showtime for the IMAX theater, the big IMAX theater in New York, before when we're taping the podcast about Dune 2. No availability that wouldn't have us like craning our neck directly upward. So I think like society at large is pretty stoked on Dune 2. The advanced reviews are like impossibly good. Everybody's saying it's like the best movie since Top Gun Maverick, which we'll see.
No, they're discounting John Wick 4. Crazy.
Insane. Frankly, reckless. But Maverick, yeah, I don't know.
I did have a conversation with somebody like yesterday about how Top Gun Maverick is like the greatest movie ever created. How it saved, because someone's like, oh, Dune 2 is going to save cinema. And I'm like, Maverick already did that. We've been theaters are only open because Tom Cruise flew a jet. Oh my gosh.
I will never forget Tom Cruise introing the movie and how fucking cocky that was. And the fact that it was like, I forget exactly what he said, but it was along the lines of like, hey, I'd like to welcome you back to the theaters to watch me, Tom Cruise, save movies. Here you go. And when they rolled the opening of the movie, all of us looking at each other like, okay. And then, yeah, he did it.
Yeah.
Fucking did it.
Then he carried that confidence into the next Mission Impossible movie, which it did not deserve in the same way. But he's like, yeah, this motorcycle stunt, this is going to save movies. And it's like, I don't know, man, Maverick already did it. Like, why are we trying to do this? Just, I don't know. I don't know what he should do. Personally, he should probably fuck off. But as far as starring in movies, make another Maverick. I don't know. Get Tom Cruise in Dune 3.
We're drawn to a close here. Danny, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful to have you. Do you have any last thoughts on Dune 2022?
No, but I still haven't seen Top Gun Maverick, so I guess I have to watch that.
What?
I can talk
about that on the next one.
You're gonna love it.
Yeah, I gotta watch it still. I'll watch Dune 2. I mean, I think Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya are like they're pulling a lot of weight there, and I think that's a big draw for people. So that's my final take. Sci-fi for dads.
God, that should be the name of our podcast.
Sci-fi for dads. It's pretty good.
Movies for dads. Oh, that's so much better.
Oh, what did the pitch for a rename when we were talking about what if we renamed the podcast, one of my pitches was DILFs on film. Positioning us, the alternate title was Film DILFs.
Film DILFs is good.
Yeah. I don't know.
We would have to have kids to support to make it work. No,
I think spiritually we're both DILFs already.
I think so.
What did you think, listener? Do you think Dune 1 was great? Are you stoked for Dune 2? Are Tim and I DILFs? Let us know. Send us an email, nerdy430@gmail.com. Danny, thank you again for joining us. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Thank you, Danny.
I got nothing. Just, nothing.
Hell yeah. That makes three of us. We'll be here again next week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay nerdy. Bye.
Stay nerdy. Bye. Thanks, Danny.